It's on. Okay, so first I'd just like to, on behalf of all the speakers, thank the organizers for this conference, for the invitations to come and everything they've done to organize such a stimulating and successful workshop. And so thank you very much for all your effort. This is the last talk of the workshop, and so I thought that since everybody's tired, including me, that I would give a recreational talk. So this one, the goal here is to enjoy this as some mathematical oddities, which, as you'll see, may be useful for physics as well. So the title, as I had here, is Solving the Hierarchy Problem Without Susy or Extra Dimensions. But as you'll see very quickly, the word solving is really far too strong. I'm really, if I were to give a longer but perhaps more accurate title, it would be something like that. The tentative beginnings of a set of possible ideas which, if true, might eventually be useful in helping to develop a new perspective which, if relevant, could potentially lead. And the important words, you know, tentative, possible, if, might, help. My goal here is to present an alternative philosophy regarding the hierarchy problem. Really, this is a philosophical talk. I'm not going to be giving any model. There won't be any Lagrangian. I certainly have no data. My purpose here is to be provocative and to sketch some ideas. I really would like to urge a different way of thinking about the hierarchy problem. So, just to remind everybody that in recent years there's been a lot of discussion of new methods of solving or addressing the hierarchy problem. I will take the hierarchy problem to be the problem of not generating but stabilizing, so this is the technical hierarchy problem, stabilizing this desert from the electroweak scale at several hundred GeV to these fundamental scales of physics all up at 10 to the 16 GeV. I remind you again what deserts look like. Yeah, okay. Supersymmetry is the first idea. It has virtues and it has problems. The virtue is that it stabilizes the desert once the desert is established somehow, but it needs to be broken in the TeV range because we don't see superpartners. That introduces a whole host of questions. How do you break supersymmetry? You need some sort of hidden sector. How do you shield the hidden sector from the observable sector and so forth, and it spins out of control. And moreover, since supersymmetry is broken, it doesn't address the cosmological constant problem. If you have to break supersymmetry in the TeV range, you leave behind a cosmological constant in the TeV range, which is a lot better than the Planck scale to the fourth, but still many, many, many orders of magnitude away from what we need experimentally. Second, then there's large extra dimensions, and this has the ability to lower the string scale, the Planck scale, and the gut scale, and lots of different scales. It certainly eliminates the desert, although it may reintroduce a desert by introducing a hierarchy in radii. For example, if we lower the Planck scale to a TeV in the ADD scenario, but we do that with an extra dimension at a millimeter is 10 to the minus 4 EV. The gap between 10 to the minus 4 EV and a TeV is the same as between a TeV and the gut scale, actually. So one may not even really solve the hierarchy problem, but maybe just rephrase it. But we still perhaps need supersymmetry for stability, maybe not on the brains, but we need supersymmetry in the bulk, perhaps for the stability of the brain configurations that come into these scenarios. And then again, thinking about the cosmological constant problem, it's not automatically solved simply by lowering these scales into the TeV range. Even if I lower all these scales into the TeV range, I still need some additional mechanism for approaching the cosmological constant problem. Okay, after that came warped space-times, Randall-Sundrum scenarios. Here, unlike the other scenarios, the hierarchy is generated naturally as a result of this warp factor. So you put in a small number of order one, you get out a big hierarchy exponentially. But again, the questions are, how do you realize this scenario from string theory? What, again, about the cosmological constant problem, really not addressed? And in particular, one needs supersymmetry again for stability, or in this case, to fine-tune the brain tensions, the conditions on the brain tensions for the positive tension brain, the negative tension brain, and the bulk, again, seem to suggest that there's some sort of supersymmetry that may be needed here to guarantee those brain tension relations. A fourth approach, which perhaps didn't get a lot of attention, is called the conformal approach. I'm thinking here of work by Frampton and Vaffa in 1999. The idea was that if one could introduce new states at, say, the TEV scale, in such a way that these extra states plus the original standard model states would give rise to a conformal symmetry, a theory which didn't have a scale dependence. That, of course, requires new physics in the TEV range, but because beyond the TEV range the theory would be conformal, everything would run very flat, there would be no scale dependence above that, and so again, technically, the hierarchy problem is solved. The problem, though, there are lots of them. First, if you're coming down from high energies and you really do have a conformal symmetry, then that, by definition, doesn't have a scale associated with it. So how do you trigger conformal symmetry breaking at the TEV scale? Where does the TEV scale come from in a conformal theory? Then there's the cosmological constant problem, which again still remains. And even within this context, it was pointed out later by Chabachaki and Witold Skiba and John Turning that even the hierarchy problem really isn't fully solved in this context. So, again, there are lots of issues. And what I'd like to do in this talk is present a new approach motivated toward solving these problems, which is motivated by studies of non-supersymmetric string theories. So I should start with my statement of philosophy. So here we go. These are my four guiding principles that I'm going to use when I'm trying to generate a new way of thinking. First, to me, at least, it seems that the hierarchy problem and the cosmological constant problem are essentially the same problem, or at least the same kind of problem. They're both problems of stabilizing a light scale, like the Higgs mass or the cosmological constant, against the effects of a heavy fundamental scale, Gut, Planck, string, something really high, with which it communicates quantum mechanically. That's what a technical hierarchy problem is. And because they're the same kind of problem, they should have a common solution. And this is really not what happens in the usual pictures. For example, in supersymmetry, they don't have a common solution because if you break supersymmetry at the TEV scale, you leave behind a cosmological constant, which is too large. If you break conformal symmetry at the TEV scale, again, you have a similar problem. So that leads us to suggest that if any kind of symmetry, for example, supersymmetry, is used to protect the hierarchy, but has to be broken at the TEV scale because of collider data, then that means that the protection that that symmetry used to give for the cosmological constant problem is also lost at that scale. And therefore, the second thing I'd like to have is a symmetry which stabilizes the hierarchy, but which doesn't need to be broken at all. Because I don't want to introduce a scale where I break it. So that means that whatever symmetry I'm going to want, instead of conformal symmetry, instead of supersymmetry, it must already be consistent with the standard model at low energies, and therefore, when not broken, should not predict degenerate superpartners or conformal partners or anything that we don't already see. So that's the second thing. Third is a question about how we should think about scales. Now, in quantum field theory, we are encouraged to think about scales as being linearly ordered along a line, from smaller to bigger. So at small energies, we have the electroweak scale. At high energies, we have the Gut scale and the Planck scale. Somewhere in between, we have the scale of supersymmetry breaking. And we're used to thinking about these things arranged linearly, so that as we come down from high scales, heavy states decouple, we can integrate them out to pass to effective field theories at lighter and lighter energy scales, and we can ask how things develop in this way. But string theory, this is okay from quantum field theory point of view, but string theory suggests something different. String theory has what has been called quantum geometry. I'll give you the best example of this, T-duality for closed strings. A string that propagates on a circle, on a space-time compactified on a circle of radius r, is indistinguishable in terms of spectrum, in terms of scattering amplitudes, in terms of to all orders in perturbation theory, from a string which propagates on a circle of radius 1 over r in string units. These are indistinguishable. So a large radius and a small radius in space-time are indistinguishable as far as a string is able to feel it. Momentum modes get exchanged with winding modes. There's a big conspiracy going on here. And the net result is small and large, or high-energy scales and low-energy scales, are mixed up and not distinguishable. And if you ask how this happens, it's just what I said. This miracle, from a field theory point of view, it's a miracle. It's achieved through a conspiracy between physics at all energy scales simultaneously. Heavy states and light states all are arranged in such a way simultaneously at all energy scales to make this possible. And I want to stress this is not no scales, as in a conformal approach, but all scales simultaneously conspiring to do something. All scales are playing an equal role here. Nothing is being integrated out. If you were to integrate out certain heavy states, you would not see the symmetry anymore. So it's natural to ask whether one might be able to solve the hierarchy and cosmological constant problems this way. Finally, relatedly, fourth, the critical ingredient of string theory that makes all of these nice properties happen is the presence of an infinite number of states in the string spectrum. And I don't just mean Kaluza-Klein states, which everyone's been talking about lately, but also winding states and string resonances. And these are all different kinds of heavy string states which populate all mass scales. And so the question is whether it would be possible to exploit this infinite set of states at all mass scales in order to have a new way of thinking about the hierarchy problem. So, just to summarize, here would be a wish list of what I would like if I could make an approach work along these lines. I would want some kind of symmetry, some approach which involves a symmetry that would be unbroken, but no conflict with the standard model. All mass scales should be equally involved in making this work. It should involve critically an infinite number of states. And it should address, in some sense, the hierarchy problem and the cosmological constant problem simultaneously. All right, so this is clearly a very big wish list. All right, so let's begin. How could I start thinking about this? I'm going to try to develop this picture very slowly. So let's first start by thinking about supersymmetry. How does it work? Well, let's think about this. The divergences in quantum field theory that we're worried about, the things that destabilize our hierarchies, are generally controlled by supertraces. And I'll remind you that the Higgs mass receives corrections which depend on the cutoff, which is my little lambda here. There's a quadratic dependence on the cutoff and a logarithmic plus finite terms. The quadratic is dependent on the supertrace of mass to the zero, and the coefficient of the logarithmic divergence is supertrace of mass squared. For the cosmological constant, the coefficient of the quartic divergence is the supertrace of m to the zero. For the quadratic term, it's supertrace of m squared, and there's a log term supertrace of m to the fourth. Plus finite pieces. And when I say these coefficients, these supertraces to different mass powers, all I mean by supertrace is that you take the spectrum of the states in the theory, you sum over them, positive contributions for bosons, negative for fermions, so minus one to the fermion number, and then these are weighted by the masses to different powers, the appropriate power, whatever I'm talking about here. So supertrace of m to the zero just counts the total number of bosons minus the total number of fermions, but the higher order supertraces depend on the actual mass spectrum. So the cancellations inherent in supersymmetry are encoded as cancellations of the supertraces. In particular, for supersymmetry, for every boson, there's a degenerate fermion when the supersymmetry is unbroken. So that means that every supertrace to all orders vanishes for all orders. And what that means is that the hierarchy problem is solved, and in fact, the cosmological constant problem is solved. And what I mean by this is that both the Higgs mass and the cosmological constant lose their sensitivities to the heavy scale, lose their sensitivities to the cutoff. Okay? In fact, even something stronger happens, the cosmological constant will actually vanish. So even the constant terms actually vanish. But for this talk, I'm worried about losing sensitivities to heavy cutoffs. So that's great. That's supersymmetry. But the problem is, with supersymmetry from this point of view, is that this cancellation in the supertraces is occurring multiplet by multiplet, scale by scale. And therefore, we're back to the same story. If you break supersymmetry at some scale, like the TV scale, that destroys the solution for the other problem. The supertraces are now going to be of TEV size, and that will destroy the solution for the cosmological constant problem. You see, we're trying to do the hierarchy, the gauge hierarchy, and the cosmological constant problem at the same time, but the scales for those two problems are different. So therefore, we don't really want to have to break whatever symmetry we were looking for at any scale. So how could we ensure vanishing supertraces at all orders without supersymmetry? So that's how I'm going to pose the problem. Now, so imagine somebody gives you some number of bosons and some number of fermions, and you have a lot of dials, and you can control the masses of the bosons and the masses of the fermions. How can you arrange it without supersymmetry? Well, if you're given a finite number of states, it turns out there's no other solution. to kill the supertracers to all orders. You'd have to arrange the bosons and the fermions in degenerate pairs. You're essentially reproducing a supersymmetric spectrum. However, if you're dealing with a system with an infinite number of states, such as string theory, other solutions are actually possible. But if I'm talking about theories with an infinite number of states, I have to be a little more careful, because my definition of supertrace gets a little bit out of control. Because if I have infinite numbers of states which are heavier and heavier, my definition of supertrace is going to diverge, so I need some sort of regulator now. So let me introduce a regulator. This is the regulator suggested by string theory. So here it is. Y is going to be my regulator, my cutoff, if you will. So I put in a damping factor, which depends on this number y, and then I'm at the end of the calculation going to take the limit as y goes to 0, which removes this damping and effectively gives me back my supertrace. So what this does is it damps, for any positive value of y, it damps the contributions of heavy states to this sum, but the damping gets less and less severe as I take y to 0 and leaves me back with my pure supertrace. So, if I take, and as I say, this definition of the supertrace will be the one uniquely that respects the symmetries I'm going to be proposing to replace supersymmetry or conform. If I have supersymmetry, then this sum will vanish within each multiplet. So the regulator is not even necessary. Okay, so if this is my definition now, and I do this for a finite number of states, then this reduces to the same definition as my supertrace. But for an infinite number of states, it turns out that this will make sure that the supertrace converges for all cases of interest that I'm going to be caring about. So now the question is, can I solve for vanishing supertraces to all orders without supersymmetry with this definition? In fact, let me make it a little bit simpler. Let me first focus on just the hierarchy problem, the gauge hierarchy problem. So the question then is simpler. It's, can I satisfy just the vanishing of the supertrace of m to the 0 and the supertrace of m squared without supersymmetry? That will take care of the sensitivity of the Higgs mass to the cutoff, and it'll turn out later that that'll ultimately be sufficient for the cosmological constant problem as well. So this is all I have to care about, these first two. So let's do that. So let's start with a toy model. So I'll start with the simplest possible non-supersymmetric situation, two bosons. Actually, the simplest would be one boson, but I'm just going to normalize things with twos, and you'll see why in a few minutes. So imagine I have two bosons sitting there massless. Well, scalars are very sensitive to higher cutoff physics. As we know, these could be the Higgs particles. So I need to somehow cancel the supertraces associated with two bosons. And the standard technique for doing that is to introduce two fermions. And let me assume that there's some splitting, m naught. So m naught is going to be my overall mass scale for splittings. So if I have two fermions, now I can calculate the supertraces in this little picture. Supertrace of m to the 0 is just the number of bosons minus the number of fermions, so it's 0. But supertrace of m squared comes out to be negative because there are heavier fermions than bosons, minus 2 m naught squared. So you see that there's no way with this little configuration here of canceling both supertraces unless I take m naught, the splitting parameter, to be 0, which reproduces the supersymmetric configuration. But let's leave it here. And now let's build our real toy model by repeating this system at an infinite number of mass levels. And I'm going to take my spectrum to be just like what it is in string theory. So I'm going to have levels not just 0 and 1, but I'm going to have a whole tower of mass levels where the nth level is the square root of n times m naught. M naught is my arbitrary splitting parameter. Really, I'm thinking of the string scale, but I'm not trying to use string language to discuss this. So this is an arbitrary splitting parameter, and there's a whole spectrum of states. And let me imagine that I populate now this system at all mass levels by repeating this over and over and over again at higher and higher levels. So here is my scenario for n equals 0 and n equals 1 as I had before, but now I'm going to repeat this at higher and higher levels. Bosons when n is even, fermions when n is odd. Well, let me calculate the supertraces for this. Well, the supertrace of M naught is calculated. I have my cutoff. Here it is. And I take the limit as it goes to 0. Here's my regulator. And I'm summing the number of states is just 2 at each level, minus 1 to the n, because it's plus for bosons, minus for fermions. Well, it turns out I can do this sum. It's a geometric sum. It's a geometric series. I just get this. I then take the limit as y goes to 0. I get 1. And 1 is actually what you expect. Because if you think about adding up the supertraces, counting the number of bosons minus the number of fermions as I go to higher and higher levels, well, first I have the 0 level, so it's 2. Now I have 2 fermions back to 0. 2, 0, 2, 0. And the average of that, the regulated version of 2 and 0, is 1. Okay, this is how the regulator is giving me a sensible finite answer. Let me also calculate supertrace of m squared. Well, I do the same thing. Now I'm summing, but instead of 2 in here, I have m naught squared, because I'm calculating weighted by the masses. Well, m naught is just a derivative with respect to my regulator y, so I pull it out d by dy. Now it's my sum again. I evaluate the sum. I take the derivative, and then I take the limit, and I get this, 1 half m naught squared. Notice it's finite, which it otherwise would not have been. So my regulator is working. Okay, so I look at the supertraces here, and I say, well, they're not zero. Neither of them is zero. So I haven't succeeded in making a theory that doesn't have sensitivity to high scales. But I notice that this does have the property that it is the same supertraces as I would have if I had a single boson with a mass m naught over the square root of 2. So I can cancel, and m naught over the square root of 2 would be like n equals a half, right? Because it's root n. So I can cancel these supertraces by introducing an additional fermion at level a half. And this configuration now of double pairs of bosons and fermions all the way up to infinity plus a single extra fermion has supertrace of m naught equaling 0 and supertrace of m squared equaling 0. I admit it's a very non-trivial, sick, perhaps, way of doing this, but it works. Okay, the point of this is just a little toy model. I'm not going to build any model based on that, certainly. But I'm just trying to get you used to this.
There is something here.
There is something here, I should hope so. Yes.
Higher speed.
Yes.
This is the theory, the only known theory of interacting higher speed system.
Yes.
So if you started to by taking the fields, you know, with higher speed, they will never be consistent.
Let me short. Let me short. Oh, of course.
So,
this
theory is just, you take a free field.
Yeah, I know exactly what I'm doing. Hang on. I am trying to paint a picture for you. I just opened the canvas and I introduced you to the colors. We're about to start painting. I promise you I'm going to have a complete theory for you. Where your objections will be meaningful and answerable. Okay, but I'm just trying to get our feet wet first. All right, this is just a toy model, but it illustrates at least the themes I want to start with, which are, one, the cancellation of divergences does not require a strict pairing of bosons and fermions if there are an infinite number of each, as we saw. Two, this holds for all values of m naught, our splitting parameter, the scale for those towers and the levels between them. No scale is preferred or selected by this procedure. Three, if m naught, however, is very, very large, bigger than the experimental energies that I've got accessible, available to me, then all I would see is the ground state, like the standard model. So that looks perfectly non-supersymmetric. Yet the divergences of that standard model would be canceled, nevertheless, by this infinite tower of heavy Planck scale states, for example, which I would never hope to see, and yet which will cancel the divergences of the light states. And what this shows also is that I can't integrate out any of those heavy states because they're critical. They're part of the supertrace. And in particular, I certainly can't integrate out an infinite number of them, which is exactly what I would want to do if I were trying to pass to an effective field theory. I mean, you can integrate out one or two states. There are theorems about this, but you can't integrate out infinite towers of states. For certain things, and I'm going to talk about that. That's my whole point. Okay, but that was just a toy model. It's not realistic. First of all, I had to add that extra fermion. That was very unnatural. It's still not supersymmetric, but it's very close to being supersymmetric. It has boson-fermion pairings and all over the spectrum, and I didn't want to have that. If I really believe in string theory, I know that the number of states should grow at higher masses. It shouldn't just stay constant. In string theory, the heavier the state, the more ways there are combinatorically of exciting different modes of the string to produce that state. So I want the number of states to grow. So can I do better? Yes, it turns out there are lots of mathematical solutions. Let's let G sub n be the number of bosons minus the number of fermions at level n. Obviously, all we care about here is the number of bosons minus the number of fermions if we're calculating only supertraces. So let's let G sub n be those numbers. Then here are a bunch of solutions, all of which you can just show mathematically, satisfy not only that the supertrace of m naught and m squared vanish, but in fact, all supertraces vanish to all orders. It turns out, just mathematically, you can show this. For example, let's look at n to the fifth minus n. Here's what that configuration looks like. Turns out there's nothing at the bottom, nothing at n equal 1, but then 30, 240, 10, 20, and so forth. Just so happens. So all of those solutions, and you can generate many of them, satisfy vanishing supertrace conditions. But again, this is still not very good because we want to be even more realistic. All of those solutions end up having nothing at the massless level, just like this last one I showed. So there are no light states left as that splitting parameter goes very large. And I want that because I want to assume that this splitting parameter may be the string scale and that my massless states are my putative non-supersymmetric standard model. Moreover, in string theory, taking string theory very seriously, I want my degeneracies to grow exponentially. And string theory tells me exactly how they grow. The G sub n's should grow as, according to this form, this is the Hagedorn form for the exponential growth in the number of states at any level n. And so I'd like to have that. So the question is, can we solve the supertrace constraints with exponentially growing degeneracies? Well, yes. There are solutions. Let me present one. I'm going to call it a magic solution, but there are many. Here it is. Now, obviously, I'm just spitting numbers at you, and you'd like to know, obviously, if I'm going to claim that this really satisfies the supertrace constraints, I'm going to need to know this series of numbers all the way up to infinity, so I need some generating function for them. There are techniques in string theory which will tell me exactly what these numbers are. There are formulas which give these to you, and I will just flash so you know that it's real. Here is a function. You may be surprised that it actually converges to an integer for any integer n, but Hardy and Ramanujan have proved that this is the case. So, okay, there are ways. We'll talk all about this in a few minutes. But here's the lowest set of numbers that it corresponds to. It's clearly non-supersymmetric, obviously. I claim, and I'll show you later, that indeed supertrace of m to the 0 and supertrace of m squared both vanish.
What would the result be if we just add one, number one, for this
calc? Calculate the supertrace without it, and then add.
You used 1,836,336. If you used the 337,
yeah. It would be the supertraces you had before plus the supertrace extra contribution from the extra guy. I know, at this moment, I'm just trying to show you that it can work. I'll motivate all this in a minute. Okay, my low-energy world here is non-supersymmetric. It has 36 bosons, or in general, it has 36 more bosons than fermions. Or another way to say it is it has any number of bosons more than fermions, because I can always rescale all this by any overall coefficient. That won't ever make a difference, because the supertraces are all vanishing. Or I can multiply it by minus 1, so I can change all fermions to bosons. So I have a lot of freedom here. So I can always fit the standard model right into here, non-supersymmetric.
Did you say that was the smallest in some way?
36?
Yeah.
It's the smallest. This is the smallest number which is divisible into all of, which isn't the, I mean, I can't pull out an overall factor And I can't divide everything by 18, for example.
You know what I mean? Is there another solution where the ground state has mass degeneracy?
Good question. I don't know how to classify them. Actually, they have been classified. I don't know the answer. They have been classified. Okay. You'll observe that there's no pairing of states at any mass level. There's no way to say that 36 plus 100 plus this equals this plus this. In fact, you can't even say that the average of this and this is this, or the average of the greens is equal to the average of the reds. There's nothing. There's no way to pair this. This is a cancellation of supertraces, which is occurring non-trivially across the infinite particle spectrum. So this is a highly non-trivial thing, only possible when they're in an infinite number of states, such as you have in string theory. No, there's no fine-tuning here, and I'm now going to tell you the truth. Okay. This is clearly something very interesting, but why should you believe that any of this is relevant for the real world? The answer is that this is what string theory actually does. Now, I'll remind you that string theory is a finite theory, and it's a finite theory even without supersymmetry, modulo issues of stability of non-supersymmetric strings, which I will get to, so let's put that aside. Other than that, string theory is a finite theory even without supersymmetry, and the reason is very geometric. Strings are extended objects. And because they're extended objects, they have a fundamental length scale associated with them. The finite extent of the string actually means that there's kind of a cutoff built into string theory already. And this is the reason that string theory manages to be a finite theory. If the string theory exhibits supersymmetry in space-time, then the cancellations that you're used to in the supertrace occur in the usual way supersymmetry would tell you that they occur, namely pairwise. But if the string is non-supersymmetric, then the method I'm showing you is exactly the method by which string theory manages to adjust its spectrum so as to maintain its finiteness. String theory is still finite even without supersymmetry if it's as long as it's a stable string. And the way it happens is that it arranges its spectrum just this way, balancing towers against towers, non-trivially like this, such that the cancellations occur across the entire string spectrum. And this is a general property of all closed, perturbative, non-supersymmetric strings. And this is actually something that I noticed years ago. So this is not new. But the point is that this is something that is completely general, and it's guaranteed, and there is a symmetry underlying this. But the symmetry is not supersymmetry, it's not even conformal symmetry, it's modular invariance. So this is the symmetry that I'm proposing should replace supersymmetry, or could replace supersymmetry or conformal symmetry to yield a finite theory. Now, because it's a symmetry, it has direct geometric origins in string theory. It reflects the fundamental extended nature of the string, the thing that gives you the finiteness. It's a general property of the perturbative moduli space of closed strings and, therefore, the bulk sector of open strings. And it serves as the ultimate root of string finiteness, even when supersymmetry is broken. And unlike supersymmetry or conformal symmetry, there's no reason, there's no need to break modular invariance for phenomenological purposes. It doesn't predict something necessarily that you wouldn't see. Moreover, to answer the question that was being raised here, there is a symmetry here governing this. So I don't have to fine-tune everything very carefully. There's a symmetry that keeps these delicate cancellations in check because modular invariance makes this symmetry, this cancellation, robust.
But the string scale is much higher than the weak scale, and the scale of the constant, the finiteness are not guaranteed that you solve this. You explain smallness of weak scale, or you explain smallness.
That's right. I am not attempting to generate the hierarchies, I'm only attempting to explain why they're stable. I am never going to have any explanation for why there is a hierarchy, why the weak scale is lower than the Planck scale. If my radiative corrections are calculated within the framework of a fundamentally modular invariant theory, they will also be modular invariant, and therefore the spectrum will adjust, but still adjust in such a way as to preserve these cancellations.
No, but you just say that it's just finite. You don't say that it's general, right?
What?
It's finite.
I'm saying the supertraces are vanishing. And right, so I'm saying that whether or not you, when you have radiative corrections and all, still the spectrum is going to be modular invariant, assume that. If that's true, then that means that these cancellations will still occur to keep supertraces vanishing. Oh, I haven't talked about the cosmological constant problem at all yet. I haven't said a word about it. I'm just talking about supertrace.
Just supertrace, yeah.
Yeah, so far.
I want to make it clear what I'm saying. I mean, so.
Okay, but now you know we're talking about modular invariance, and you know we're talking about string theory. That was the part you didn't have last time. Okay, now go.
So let's forget the string theory, as you say. And let's take the different type of string, different type of fields with a rising speed.
Yeah.
Let's construct this, the field theory was spin 2. That will be gravity. Now, let's construct the field theory of spin 3. My statement is that you can. You can be.
Can or cannot?
The theory of spin 3.
Can. Are able to.
The only field theory of spin 3 consistently interacting. It's the spin-free theory, which is in the string spectrum,
yeah.
Level 3.
Right.
So, which means that if then you say this cancellation of traces in some magic theory, this theory as interacting theory
does
not exist, or we don't know. Doesn't exist. Nobody.
Are you making an attack on string theory? Are you making an attack on string theory? Sounds like. Are you protesting anything I'm saying here?
The only consistent theory.
Yeah.
Higher spin.
Yes.
Spin theory.
Yeah.
Is a string theory.
Good. I'm telling you, this is what string theory does. I just didn't start by saying I'm talking about string theory. I led you through a little story about bosons and fermions. I am talking about string theory. I just wanted to introduce it slowly.
Do you have a stable string theory?
Ah, no, obviously. Okay, let me now give you examples. I'll come back to that, because that's the critical question, of course. For example.
But then, in string theory, the spectrum is fixed. You cannot play with it.
And here it is, and it's going to do this. I wasn't playing with it. I was describing to you what actually happens. It's just that I thought that if I dumped on you this big miracle from string theory, it would take a while to absorb. So I just decided to pedagogically build it up. That's all. This is what string theory does. No surprise. For example, here. The non-supersymmetric tachyon-free SO16 cross SO16 heterotic string. By the way, it is a string theory. It is non-supersymmetric, yet it has no tachyons. Don't believe that breaking supersymmetry requires that you introduce tachyons in the tree-level spectrum. That's not so. It's been known for many years. Okay, what does the spectrum of it look like? Here it is. I am plotting as a function of the mass level, zeroth level, 1, 2, 3, 4, up in units of m0, which can be anything, but really probably very big. If I plot a positive number, this is more bosons than fermions. If I plot a negative number, this is more fermions than bosons. I'm plotting this on a log scale because this is growing exponentially, so I'm just plotting it as a log. So, at the zeroth level, there are more fermions than bosons. At the first excited level, there are many, many more bosons than fermions. At the second excited level, there are many, 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 many more fermions than bosons, and so forth, up through the spectrum, exponentially increasing. Yet this configuration has supertrace of m0, m squared, m to the fourth, and m to the sixth all vanishing. For the magic solution I claimed before, it turns out that only the first two supertraces vanish. But remember how it went? Two boson surpluses, 36 and something else, then two fermions, then two bosons, fermions, bosons, and so forth. And this has the first two supertraces vanishing. In general, you can ask, how is this working? What's really happening here? How is finiteness being preserved with these arrangements? And what's really happening is the following. A generic situation looks something like this. I'm just sketching now. So there is some oscillation going on between bosonic sectors where now I've decided n is integer and fermionic sectors where n is integer plus a half, or I could rescale it and call this even and odd, whatever. The idea is that there's an oscillation. And you see that the numbers of states, the numbers of bosons at one level here minus the number of fermions at this level, and both, there's no direct cancellation that is pairwise, but nevertheless, the functional forms, this functional form, that governs the bosonic sector, and this functional form which governs the fermionic sector, those functional forms cancel as functional forms. And this is the remnant of supersymmetry that's being preserved. It's the cancellation of the functional forms. So what that means is that I can understand now smoothly how the supersymmetry is introduced and likewise how it's broken. Ordinary supersymmetry emerges as a special case when the splitting between the energy levels N for the bosons and the energy levels N for the fermions goes to zero. When the bosonic sectors come sliding along here to the integer positions, then the supersymmetry becomes aligned. And when it's aligned, I do now feel the same functional form at the same value of the argument. And so this is the same number as this. This is the same number as this. This is the same number of this. And that is a pairwise cancellation. That is supersymmetry in string theory. But what the most I can do to break supersymmetry in string theory, any mechanism, Schurk-Schwarz, anything you want, all that's happening is that you're introducing a shift whereby these red lines, these red dots, slide back to their black positions. Supersymmetry is broken. The degeneracies, the numbers of states, are changing at each level, but they're changing in such a way that a cancellation of the functional forms, this functional form against this one, is still preserved. And in order to do that, obviously, there are some number of fermions here. This number has to increase in order to slide it down. But why is that happening? Because in string theory, they're in an infinite tower of states. New winding modes and other states come down and are shifted automatically into these slots in order to keep you riding on those functional forms. So finiteness is still preserved, but the supersymmetry has been misaligned in some sense. So I call this a misaligned supersymmetry. So that's what's really going on here. And this is the most you can break supersymmetry while remaining consistent with modular invariance. That's the picture. And this is true for any string. For example, here's a complicated semi-realistic four-dimensional SU3 cross SU2 cross U1 three-generation non-supersymmetric string model. It turns out it has six sectors in it. I'm talking about different orbifold twisted sectors and so forth. The usual thing, this is heterotic. There are four sectors, A, D, E, and C, which are bosonic, have more bosons than fermions. Two sectors which are fermionic. The number of states goes here from sector A to B, C, D, E, F, and then repeats. There's a repeating pattern. There are functional forms for each sector. So there are six functional forms. And yet, what happens? The ones with the strongest exponential growth are sectors C and F. They cancel against each other for their leading behavior, but they don't give a complete cancellation. There's a subleading behavior. That cancels against the leading behavior from B and E, leaving behind a sub-subleading behavior, which cancels against A and D to produce a complete cancellation. Always. Let me introduce two string models, which I'll talk about later if there's time. One has gauge group SU6 cross SU4 cubed, just chosen for its pretty picture. You see, here there are four sectors. If I plot them versus the square root of N versus the mass, you see again there's this regular oscillation, and the functional forms cancel. B against D, A against C. That's one model, SU6 cross SU4 cubed. Let me show another one. This one is E6 cross SO10 gauge group, cross other factors. It has eight sectors. The oscillation pattern is rather complicated, but still, there's a complete cancellation. It's a non-trivial cancellation happening between all sectors at all mass scales. Modular invariance is forcing this to always be the way it is. For the magic solution, it was four sectors, two bosons, two fermions, bosons, and so forth. Four functional forms which cancel. Moreover, now let's talk about the cosmological constant. How would I evaluate it? Let's just talk one loop. I would evaluate it in the usual way as the sum of the zero-point energies in field theory, integrate over the momentum, sum over all the spectrum, the number of states, bosons minus fermions, times the logarithm of the momentum variable of integration plus the mass of the state. That's the usual formula. Okay, let me manipulate it a little bit. First, I will change the logarithm into a parameterization using a Schwinger proper time, t. So I am now writing it in terms of an exponential t, integral over t. That's instead of the log. That means that the ultraviolet divergence has now become a divergence as t goes to 0. The Schwinger proper time ultraviolet divergence is as t goes to 0. Okay, now let me do the momentum integrations. These are standard manipulations. I dropped something that is independent of the masses and of the momentum. I dropped an overall constant. That's the standard thing that happens when you do the Schwinger proper time manipulation. You drop an overall term which is independent of the argument. So it doesn't matter. That's a standard thing. These manipulations are completely standard. Okay, now I'll do the momentum integrations. That just changes the denominator here from t to t cubed. This is as far as I get in ordinary field theory. But it's modular invariant spectrum G sub n. What that means is that I can play the game in string theory where I rewrite this as a string integral, which is an integral now not over the strip but over the fundamental domain. For those of you that are not string theorists, don't worry. That's not the point. I just want you to see that this looks like a partition function, but because it has a symmetry, a modular invariant symmetry, turns out I can remove, there's a procedure which enables me to remove the sensitivity to the ultraviolet region by truncating it. This is the standard thing. And now I get a finite answer, which is why in field theory the cosmological constant, strictly speaking, diverges, but in string theory it's finite. But now, if I take that magic solution and put in the actual values of G sub n, turns out I get 0. I didn't show you this, I'm just claiming it. So that magic solution actually has a vanishing cosmological constant as well. Now, in the interest of time, I could skip a whole discussion of how this works, but this is standard string theory. It just goes on and on. But let me pop to the main point, which I think I can explain directly. Turns out that using results from string theory, I am able to actually literally evaluate the supertrace of the masses over the whole spectrum using this regulator. And this is a modular invariant regulator, which is why it's okay to use this. And through various manipulations, which I have explained on the trivius parapharises that I skipped, here's the result. For supertraces, and this is work done with Moshe and Robert Myers, and what happens is that the supertrace of m to the 2 beta for any beta, for beta up to d over 2 minus 1 in any number of space-time dimensions, up to d over 2 minus 1, so supertrace up to m to the d minus 2 vanishes, and you prove this directly. And for beta equals d over 2 minus 1, or supertrace of d minus 2, I get this result, where lambda is the one-loop cosmological constant associated with that string model. One loop. So that's the general result for any number of space-time dimensions in any modular invariant theory without supersymmetry, or even with supersymmetry. If it's supersymmetric, it's kind of trivial. All supertraces vanish, that's okay, because the one-loop cosmological constant also vanishes. But if you break supersymmetry in string theory and maintain modular invariance, what's going to happen is that all these supertraces vanish, and the first non-vanishing supertrace is this order, and it's going to be proportional to the one-loop cosmological constant. So for a 10-dimensional string, that means that supertraces m0 all the way up to m to the 6th vanish. But for d equals 4, what this means is that supertrace of m0 vanishes and supertrace of m squared is the first one that has a one-loop cosmological constant dependence. But notice this very interesting fact. This is just what I wanted. This says that the hierarchy problem is solved in string theory only if the one-loop cosmological constant problem is solved. This is the first time you have a relation between the hierarchy problem and the cosmological constant problem. The value of the supertrace, the thing that governs the sensitivity to the heavy scale, is proportional to the cosmological constant problem. So therefore, the two problems are now connected at a fundamental level through string theory, through modular invariance and the ensuing misaligned supersymmetry that appears in the string spectrum. So the obvious question then is, I'm claiming all this is what would happen for a non-supersymmetric string. So as Ami asks correctly, do such non-supersymmetric strings exist? Well, first I need to break supersymmetry in string theory. That's easy. I'd even like to get SU3 cross SU2 cross U1 as my gauge group. This is easy. You choose orbifolds. You choose things appropriately. You choose your compactification manifolds. There are many millions of ways to do it. Make sure you don't have tachyons. Easy. Make sure it's stable. Hard. In fact, impossible, so far as we know, because there are many, many moduli which in principle don't have, which will correspond to flat directions. They don't have potentials. We don't know what their potentials are. We assume that some potentials are generated non-perturbatively, so I'm sketching something here, a non-perturbative potential. We hope that it comes in such a way that the modulus is stabilized, that there's a minimum. But this is actually a very critical question. We don't know how to calculate these potentials. But the important thing to notice is that it turns out that the moduli problem is related in flat space anyway to the cosmological constant problem. Because the one-loop cosmological constant is just this donut diagram. And yet, there's also another diagram where you have the same donut, but where the dilaton, one particular modulus, is emitted. That's a dilaton tadpole diagram. And it turns out that at one loop, these diagrams are proportional. With and without the dilaton are proportional. So the dilaton is going to have a tadpole, a non-vanishing tadpole, if the cosmological constant doesn't vanish. Or equivalently, if the dilaton has a tadpole, that means there's a linear term in the effective potential where the slope is proportional to the cosmological constant. So the only way to stabilize the dilaton in this simple picture is to have a vanishing cosmological constant. So in string theory, in flat space, the problem of the cosmological constant becomes a problem of vacuum stability. So the question is, do stable non-supersymmetric string vacua exist? Now it's a problem of stability. Well, recent developments suggest yes. There has been work a few years ago by Kachru and Silverstein, Shu and Tai, Harvey, and then a number of people, which suggests that there do exist non-supersymmetric compactifications of type 2 strings where the cosmological constant vanishes to one loop. I think it's a rather trivial way it happens there, but also to two loops, although there's some disagreement. Higher loops has been conjectured, and non-perturbatively has been conjectured, but certainly, there's progress on this, which suggests that it might be possible. However, the phenomenological problems with these strings is that all those string models that were constructed in this class have exact boson-fermion degeneracies. For every boson, there was an identical fermion. Notice that doesn't mean that they're supersymmetric. These theories had no gravity, no states. They really did break supersymmetry. But still, from my point of view, that G sub n is zero. So instead of having oscillations, it was flat. So for my phenomenological purposes, there's no way to fit at low energies just the non-supersymmetric standard model. So the question is, this is nice progress, but do stable models exist without boson-fermion degeneracies? And the answer so far is unfortunately unknown. My point, though, is that if they do exist, then they will necessarily have to have vanishing supertraces, misaligned supersymmetry, and all the things I've discussed, and therefore those mechanisms for finiteness will have to play a role within the context of those strings. So to put my claims another way, I'm claiming that in string theory we have one moduli problem, not three. The gauge hierarchy problem is related to the cosmological constant problem, is related to the problem of vacuum stability. And therefore, if you can solve one of these problems, for example, finding a non-supersymmetric stable string, that string already will have a spectrum such that the cosmological constant problem will be solved, or at least it won't be sensitive to heavy scales. And likewise, if you look at an effective field theory and ask about renormalization of the Higgs, it will also will not have a sensitivity to high scales. That lack of sensitivity to high scales is what, through modular invariance, will be part of what it means to be a stable string. Now, I agree. I've only shown these things to one loop. I claim they're likely to hold to all orders. Perhaps it's wishful thinking. But I don't think so, because it's these things held at one loop because of modular invariance. And modular invariance is a reflection of the underlying finiteness of the string to one loop. And likewise, there are expressions of modular invariance, multi-loop modular invariance, which holds at higher loops. And I would imagine, but I haven't shown, that multi-loop modular invariance will continue to make these three things connected order by order. And again, I stress that if it's a supersymmetric string, then all three problems are solved trivially through the flatness of the moduli space. But even without supersymmetry, these results suggest that this connection between these three things persists. And so if I have a stable non-supersymmetric string, then the other two problems would hold as well. In other words, within a stable non-supersymmetric string, the effective field theory for the Higgs would not have a hierarchy problem. So let me conclude. I've tried to show you the manner in which it happens in string theory that finiteness is preserved, even without supersymmetry. It's a conspiracy between all scales simultaneously, and therefore it doesn't really require weak scale super partners or gravitinos or anything like that. It involves not only Kaluza-Klein states, which is the rage right now, but also the other states, which really string theory predicts exist as well, winding states, Reggie excitations, and so forth. The full string theory spectrum is involved. And I claim that this is completely general. It applies to all closed strings, no matter what the compactification radii, no matter what choices you make for your orbifolds or your GSO projections. It's independent of the low-energy phenomenology because it relies directly on the symmetries of the fundamental string. So with this point of view, I'm really suggesting a different way to think about string phenomenology. Normally, we start with some string theory with n equal 1 supersymmetry at the Planck scale. Phenomenologists do anyway, string phenomenologists. We integrate out those infinite towers of states. In the process, we're losing finiteness, which is a shame because that's one of the real properties of string theory we should try to keep, yet we're losing it when we integrate it out. We wind up with an effective field theory at n equal 1 supersymmetry. We take that to be our soft, like the MSSM, some kind of theory at the fundamental scale, the string scale, which is an effective field theory. We then run down in energies using RGEs, using effective field theory techniques. And along the way, we break supersymmetry, for example, through Gugino condensation or through some other field theoretic mechanism to break supersymmetry. And we wind up, hopefully, if we're building our models correctly, with some non-supersymmetric field theory, such as the standard model. And then we say, oh, there's a problem, though, with the standard model. It doesn't have finiteness protection. There are apparent divergences. Therefore, the scale at which we break supersymmetry coming down this path can't be too far from the TEV, because otherwise we have the hierarchy problem. What I claim is that there may be another way to think about this picture. Instead, we should break supersymmetry first directly within the string theory at the Planck scale, thereby winding up with a non-supersymmetric string. As I keep stressing, this doesn't have to have tachyons, but we do need it to be stable. So this is a technical issue. We don't know if this box exists yet. But assuming that it does, or can be constructed, then we would have a non-supersymmetric string whose low-energy modes would exactly be the standard model itself. And therefore, there would be a direct connection between the string theory and the standard model. The zero modes of this string theory would be the standard model, but because the standard model is directly being embedded in a non-supersymmetric string, that full structure of the string theory is keeping and providing the finiteness protection against the hierarchy problem, which is now protected by the full string structure through this misaligned supersymmetry. So the zero modes of this non-supersymmetric string themselves would come from, would be the standard model. I mean, after all, you have to ask this question. We live in a world that is not supersymmetric. Does that mean that we cannot view our world as the low-energy limit of a string? If you take this point of view, perhaps not. Because we've done something, such as Gugino condensation, which is particularly field-theoretic, and we don't know if that procedure actually preserved the fundamental string symmetries like module invariance that gave us the finiteness. This way, we're not breaking any of the fundamental string symmetries at all. But that means that we have to be embeddable in a non-supersymmetric string, which I would hope would be the case. So with this point of view, we'd better hope that there's a non-supersymmetric string which is stable, because that would be our vacuum. If not, we're in trouble from this point of view. Finally, this is a brain world conference, so I should say something about the brain world. Clearly, this approach is a no-brainer. I did not involve brains at all. You may think it's a no-brainer for other reasons. That's your prerogative. But the M0, the string scale, is a free parameter. I didn't require myself to be at the string scale. I didn't require myself not to have large extra dimensions in these string models. Certainly, if M0 is 10 to the 18th GeV or so, then there will be no observable effect from this prediction, from this scenario, other than the usual extra massless states that string theory usually gives you. String theory usually gives you not just the standard model at low energies, but a lot of junk in addition. But aside from that, you won't see anything else. You won't see Kaluza-Klein states, you won't see the first excited string resonances, and yet it's all happening at the Planck scale. Infinite towers of Planck scale states, these clouds of Planck scale states are suppressing your divergences. However, if M0 is in the TEV range, well, Then, of course, you'll see the full spectrum of string states becoming accessible, so you'll have a direct way to measure this. Everything I've been saying applies to closed strings only, so therefore it operates in the bulk of the large extra dimensions, and so therefore it might be usable instead of supersymmetry to stabilize bulk dynamics. So maybe I don't need supersymmetry in the bulk. Of course, it would be nice to understand whether this generalizes to open strings, and therefore could be used to provide finiteness mechanisms on the brain. And of course, there are an infinite number of unresolved issues, so before you hit me with them, I'll be honest and tell you. First, I've only been working to one loop. Misaligned supersymmetry, I'd like to understand it beyond tree-level masses. Equivalently, I need to understand the cosmological constant to all orders, not just one loop. Moreover, I need a stable non-supersymmetric string, or else I can't talk about these things. This is the usual moduli stabilization problem, and really I believe all of these now are the same problem. So I believe that solving one will solve all, but still they need to be solved. Next, I have to talk about an extension to open strings. Misaligned supersymmetry requires modular invariance, which is a property of closed strings. I know how to make open strings from closed strings by taking orientifolds, so I need to somehow take an orientifold of misaligned supersymmetry. What remains is not clear, but it's important that something remain. Clearly, open strings are also finite in different ways, but they're still extended objects. They have finiteness properties, and so it's important to understand how it is that they are finite. It'll be related to what happens in the closed string sector, certainly. Moreover, if my closed strings are stable, even non-perturbatively, and since the non-perturbative duals of closed strings are open strings, I'm going to need to understand how open strings operate anyway in order to really talk about stability for these theories. Obviously, electroweak symmetry is broken, and I haven't told you how. I have no idea how to generate that scale. I don't know why it's light. All I'm doing is suggesting why, within the context of a fully self-consistent, stable string, the sensitivity to the heavy scales might be already eliminated. That's all I've been claiming to do. Moreover, it would be important to understand how to extend this to field theory, because even within the context of field theory, modular invariance could be used as a new kind of regulator. As people have been talking lately about something they've been calling Kaluza-Klein regularization. Well, there might be a more general picture, of which that's only a part, which I would call modular invariance regulator. There are lots of other issues, but I think most importantly, the reason one should study this is that clearly string theory does this. String theory is handing us this cute observation here about how states arrange themselves to give us finite theories, even without supersymmetry. So I think for that reason alone, this is worth exploring further. So thank you very much.
Any questions?
Well, you might have other powers of states of other symmetries besides modular invariance could also be used to.
That's right.
It wouldn't necessarily come from string
theory. It's possible. It's possible. I'm not trying to really propose putting this together. What I was really trying to do is be a detective and say, how are the strings really working? And most of the time, we don't calculate the higher levels in string theory. We just know they're there. We concentrate on the massless states. But I think that point of view is really a bit naive. For questions pertaining to widely separated scales, like hierarchy problems, it's important, I think, to look at infinite towers of string states. And I'm just saying what strings do. I didn't make this up. I'm merely reporting what happens. So you look at the partition function of any modular invariant string, and this is what you'll find happens for the degeneracies of states.
I don't know whether this question makes sense or not.
It's okay. I don't know if my talk makes sense either.
So the cancellation of these loops depends on delicate balance of these states.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened in the early universe?
Okay, good. Comment number two that I forgot to say. Obviously, in the history of the universe, there were phase transitions, right? And you go through a QCD phase, and you go through many of them. I have no answer for this except to say that if I don't break modular invariance through these transitions, then any time I have a theory and the degrees of freedom change and things clump and certain things freeze out, still, if I'm maintaining modular invariance, any time something happens, the degrees of freedom change at the massless level, everywhere in the infinite tower of states, things have to happen as well to maintain modular invariance, and again, this will be preserved. It's kind of self-tuning in a kind of weird way.
I don't think that's what I had in mind. What I had in mind is that at high temperature, we want to calculate some local occultation number that's probably different. So therefore, because of the temperature.
Alright, let me ask you a question. Does the introduction of temperature break modular invariance? It breaks supersymmetry, I know. Does it break modular invariance?
No, I don't think so. No, it doesn't fit modular.
Right.
You know, you have so many bosonic states, so many fermions.
Right, right.
The effective way you would change.
Well, if I calculate some potential at finite temperature, in the context of a modular invariant theory, do I maintain modular invariance in the process? I think so. So I would suspect that somehow the cancellations are still being preserved, probably more non-trivially than this. But I don't know. I haven't thought about it.
It'll probably shift the mass.
Yeah, but it's got to do it in a way that's keeping the symmetry.
Okay. Yeah, you're mostly talking about the spectrums.
Yes.
Right. That may have to reduce the size of fractions to the mass, the dependence constant constant.
Right.
You know that this correction to Higgs mass and those cosmic constant depends on also the coupling.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I didn't talk about that, but again, do we not have finite results in string theory when we do these calculations? In other words, the couplings also satisfy relations, which are related to, the modular invariance of the full theory.
My concern is that finiteness does not guarantee that it must be extremely small. I mean, for instance, getting the correction, which is order of the string scale, just finite, right? It's consistent finiteness, but it's too large.
Right. My point is that I think the sensitivity to the heavy scales will not be reintroduced by those corrections. But I have to admit, I have to calculate these things. So I can't claim that. But it seems to me, and I remember my first words, this is an approach, I'm trying to suggest a philosophy here. It seems to me, just thinking about it and experience calculating things in string theory, that if the string were stable, and I don't even have a stable string, really, to really exhibit this in, which is why I really can't do a calculation and tell you. But anytime things miss being stable, having no sensitivity, they're missing by the cosmological constant. They're missing by the fact that the string is not stable. So it seems to me that if one could construct a stable non-supersymmetric string, these other problems would also be taken care of simultaneously. But I have to admit, this is a hope. This is not a proof.
The question is that,
yeah.
Coupling constant, like these couplings, and couplings, can get any constant or relation from modular invariants?
Well, again, there must be. I mean, there's an infinite number of things to calculate here. I
know examples, for instance, how about spectrums?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, again, I believe so. In fact, I believe that within the set of non-supersymmetric strings, there will be some that are continually deformable away from supersymmetric points. Those guys, I believe, have a better chance of actually exhibiting all the nice properties that I want because they're related by continuous deformations away from supersymmetric points. And actually, I've been studying this, but only within that class of strings because I know how to control the deformations and look. So it's harder when you just break, you do an orbifold relation, you're not sure what is inherited from the original theory, what isn't. But for a continuous deformation, it seems a little more tractable. But these are valid questions and hard ones.
Everything what you said essentially is based on some very specific, unique regularization. And as you know, 1 minus 1 plus...
No, forget that.
It's minus 1 twelfth. So essentially my question is about regularization.
The minus 1 twelfth.
Yeah, as you know...
That's the famous 12 that gets doubled and you add 2 and you get 26.
Absolutely, but this essentially is just exactly your unique regularization.
Well, why is that a unique regulator? Because it's the only one that respects the symmetry. No, same here.
Why your regularization for a prescription is so unique? Can you explain? As you know, I can make from...
I know.
0 plus 500 minus 2000, whatever I want.
That's right. But the
can you explain why is this regularization so unique?
I can, but I would have to go through all those nasty transparencies I skipped. Let me tell you that there was a result by Kutusoff and Seiberg in 1990, which essentially means, in this language, that is the unique regulator which respects modular invariance.
So this is absolutely unique.
I believe so. I can't prove that it's the only one, but it does respect modular invariance, and that's the only, and that's the symmetry I care about. Okay, I didn't make this up. I'm using it from results of Kutasov and Seiberg, which I can summarize here if you want. Basically, they showed.
It was exactly my question. I wanted to use different.
Well, if it respects modular invariance, then you probably could, but I don't know if you get a different answer. If you do, then I want to know.
So, no more questions. So, let's thank Keith and all the speakers. Thank you, Sandy and David, and all the participants for making this a very exciting workshop. Okay, thank you. So, your regulators, basically.